Masechet Shabbat in memory of Marcel and Jack Shasho. Ruach Adonai Tanichim Began Eden. Amen.
Daf Kuf Chaf Bet. Today's daf has been dedicated by Mr. Saul Asa and family in honor of the rabbi to Skillim Mitzvot. Today's daf is being studied Le'inu Nishmat Acham Baruch Rafael Ben Miriam and Avraham Ben Esther. Ruach Hashem Tanichim Began Eden. Amen. Before we begin today's daf, I'd like to just make a clarification on something that we learned on the previous daf. On yesterday's daf, we saw a statement that was made in the name of Rabbi Yoshua ben Nevi. He said, "Kol ha-mazikin heragin b'shabbat," that anything that causes damage, for example, a certain type of animal on Shabbat that is damaging, it is permissible to kill them on Shabbat. Rav Yosef then brought a contradiction from a Braita. The Braita said that only five specific types of creatures that are dangerous is it permissible to kill on Shabbat, implying everything else, no. So Rav Yoshua was challenged by a Braita. Rav Yosef then answered the Braita and said the words, "Biratzu achara v'divrei hakol." It's talking about where they are chasing him, and according to everybody. So I'd like to just clarify that answer. Now she actually clarifies it for us on the first wide line of his commentary, and says, "Ki amar Rabbi Yoshua ben Levi." When Rabbi Yoshua ben Levi said, "Kol amazikim neheragin," that you're allowed to kill any type of mazik, "Biratzin acharav ka'amar." Rabbi Yoshua was talking where the mazikim were chasing him, the pikuach nefeshu, and therefore his life is in danger, v'divrei hakol, and that would be following all opinions, v'afilu l'Rabbi Yehuda, even Rabbi Yehuda that normally says that Rabbi Lachash and Asidicha l'gufa is hayav, and here you don't really need the the animal that you're killing, still Rabbi Yehuda would agree, since they're chasing him, it is permissible because it is a dangerous situation. They had hamisha neheragin, and that braita that said that only five specific dangerous creatures you can kill, kishen ratzina harav, that braita was talking where they're not chasing him, Rabbi Shimon, and that's following the opinion of Rabbi Shimon that says that melachas she'nasidicha legufa is patur, therefore we only rabbinically forbidden, and in this case over here where they're dangerous, even though they're not running after him or chasing him, Rabbi Shimon will be lenient to kill them. So that's the clarification. The Rabbi Yoshua statement was going according to everybody, because they were chasing him. And the Braita that listed the five is only like Rabbi Shimon, because they were stationary, and Hidush is that even though normally a melachashin is sedicha legufa is assumed Rabbanan, in this case over here, the rabbis would waive their isur in light of the fact that these are mazikin. Now we go to our Mishnah on Daf Kuf Chaf Bet. And the Mishnah says, "Nochri shehidlik etaner, mishtamesh leoro Yisrael." A Gentile that lit a flame on Shabbat, so it is permissible for a Jew to benefit from this flame. Now, the Tosafot right away points out, and we don't make a gezerah that if we allow him to benefit from the flame that was lit by the goy, that the Jew himself might come and light a flame. Even though there are other times where we do make gezerot, Tosafot says usually that is by something that a person is prone to do. For example, things that have to do with food. So we make gezerot because people usually have a tendency to go after eating, and therefore they rationalize, or they come and they'll do something regarding food. But Tosfot's lashon is aval bechol hanen. All these that the Mishnah is going to enumerate, de'acha enan kalin la'asot kol kach. First of all, they're not so easy to do. It's not so simple just to light a flame. Ve'en adam lahut acharehen. And people are not drawn after them like in other cases. If the rabbis allowed us to benefit from a flame that was lit by a goy. However, v'im bishvil Yisrael, if he lit the flame for the Jew, then it's going to be asur. Now again, this is only going to be asur mid rabbanan, because really, the goy, telling a goy to do something for you directly even, is only asur mid rabbanan. So the rabbis made over here a second gezerah. Then they said, not only can't you tell a goy to do something for you on Shabbat, but if he did it for you, without you telling him, it is forbidden to benefit from such a melacha. Now, the Tosafot does point out, and he says in his opening line, Nir'ed da'asur l'chol Yisrael, which means this is going to be forbidden not only to the fellow that he had in mind to light for, but it's going to be asur actually for all Jews. Comes the Mishnah continues. My mila mayim lehashkot behemto. If let's say the Gentile drew water from a well, and he drew the water into the Rishut HaRabim, but he did it for himself, mashke aharav Yisrael. So then the Jew can use that water in order to give it to his animals, since the goy did it for himself. Vim bishvil Yisrael asur. But if the Gentile drew the water from the well for the Yisrael, then it's going to be asur. Then it's going to be forbidden. Again, for the same logic, the rabbis made a gezerah. Now again, over here, Rabbeinu Tam points out that while it would be forbidden for the Jew to use that water to give to his animals, but it would be permissible for the Jew himself to drink it or use it. What's the difference? So Rabbeinu Tam proposes a very important principle in Shabbat, and he says that anything the Jew could have done in a permissible way, so even if the goy did it in a forbidden way for the Jew is allowed to benefit. Because the logic is he could have done it himself. Now, the goy took out this water for the Jew in order to give to his animal. Now, there is no way that the Jew would have been able to get that water out of the well into the Rishut HaRabim unless the goy did it. Therefore, to give to his animal is forbidden. However, the Jew himself could have jumped into the well, so to speak, or put his body over the well and drink from the water. So since he had a permissible way to use it for himself, so the Rabbeinu Tam says, even though the goy did it for the Jew, for the animals will be forbidden, because no way, he can't stick his animal into the well. But for himself, it would be permissible. It should be pointed out that the Ri, one of the Baalei Tosafot, argues on this Shita of Rabbeinu Tam, and says, doesn't matter. It's going to be forbidden for the Jew to use it under any capacity. Last case of the Mishnah. Asa nochri kevesh lired bo. If let's say the goy made a ramp, and he constructed a ramp in order to get off a boat. Yored acharav Yisrael. So the Jew is able to benefit from that ramp. Again, since the goy did it for himself, so the Jew can use that ramp that was constructed on Shabbat to get off the boat. Obviously, we're talking about in a case where it's permissible to disembark from the boat on Shabbat, meaning when Shabbat started, the boat was within the tomb of Shabbat, therefore he can disembark. V'im b'shvil Yisrael, again. But if the goy constructed the plank to get off the boat for the Jew, asur, it is going to be forbidden. Gemara now goes on to tell a story with Rabban Gamliel and the elders. Shayu ba'im b'sfina. They were coming on a boat and they arrived on Shabbat. And the goy constructed a ramp in order for the passengers to get off. V'yardu bo Rabban Gamliel v'zekenim. And Rabban Gamliel and the elders used the ramp and they indeed disembarked. The Gemara will explain exactly the details of this story. Comes the Gemara and says, Vitzricha, you need all three cases. Jeez, we have three cases in our Mishnah which seemingly are telling us the same deen. Case number one is where the Nukhri lights a flame. Case number two is where the Nukhri draws water. And case number three is the goy making the plank to get off the boat. Basically, we're learning the same principle three times over. That if the goy did it for himself, so it's permissible for the Jew to benefit from it. If the goy did it for the Jew, then it is forbidden. Why did the Mishnah deem it necessary to repeat the same principle three times? So the orders of Itziricha, you need all three cases. Because if you only gave me the case of the flame, mishum de ner le'echad, ner le'me'ah. Because I'll tell you that once the goy did it for himself, so you could benefit from it based on a logic that says one flame can benefit one person as well as 100 people. And therefore, I won't make a gezerah and say that if we allow the Jew to benefit, the goy might come and light more flames. Because one already can benefit many people. And therefore, if the goy did it for himself, I'll say it's permissible for a Jew to benefit. Because we're not going to make a gezerah that the goy might come and add some more flames, because it's not necessary. One flame can benefit one person as well as 100. Again, ner le'echad, ner le'me'ah. However, aval mayim l'gzor. But when it comes to the goy drawing water up for himself, and now we're going to allow the Jew to benefit, dilma atel afushe b'shvil Yisrael. Jeez, maybe you think we could make a gezerah that he might come to take more water up for the Jew. So therefore it comes to the Mishnah and tells us, no, even by water, where there's a suspicion where you might say, if you let the Jew benefit from it, he might draw up more water. So therefore the Mishnah comes and says, no, the goy did it for himself, still it is going to be permissible. So now the Gemara asks, v'kevesh lamali. So what do you need the third case of making the plank? Ma'aseh derabban Gamliel uskenim kamash ma'alan. It was really coming to tell you the chidush of Rabban Gamliel and the Zekenim that had that situation of the plank on Shabbat. So the Gemara wanted to introduce, the Mishnah wanted to introduce that story. So therefore it introduced the case of making a plank as well. The story is the chidush of the third case. Because really the plank is not necessary, because the plank is very similar to the case of the flame. Just like we say, ner le'echad, ner le'me'ah, one flame benefits one, benefits 100. One plank, just like it benefits the one person, it can benefit 100. Therefore the chidush is to tell me the Mishnah, the story of the Mishnah. Tanu Rabbanan. Now we have a braita. Nukhri sheliket asabim. Let's say a Nukhri, a Gentile, on Shabbat, he collected grass, meaning he plucked grass from the field. Ma'achil aharav Yisrael. So a Jew was allowed to feed his animals from that grass after the goy is finished. Meaning, the goy obviously did it for himself. And therefore, once the goy leaves, so now the Jew is able to go and take from that grass and use it himself to feed his animals. V'im bishvil Yisrael. Again, but if he did it, the goy cut the grass in order for the Jew to benefit, so that's going to be asur. That's clearly forbidden. Now, mila ma'im lashkot b'emto. Similar case, if the goy drew water in order to give to his animal, mashke aharav Yisrael. So the Jew can benefit from that water and give it to his animal. V'im bishvil Yisrael. However, if it's he was drawn for the Jew, asur. Comes the Gemara and says, Bame devarim amurim. When are we talking about over here? What's the scenario? She'en makiro. That's only talking about with the goy does not know or does not recognize the Jew, does not know him. Aval makiro, but if the goy knows the Jew, asur. So now we're throwing in a new condition over here. That the only time it's permissible when the goy did it for himself for a Jew to benefit is so long as the goy does not know the Jew. But if he knows him, even in that case, it is going to be forbidden. Now, the logic at this point, at least we understand, is that the reason why if he knows him, it's going to be asur, because he's going to do for the Jew himself. And therefore he's doing it for the Jew, and therefore it should be forbidden. So comes again, Gemara says, we have a contradiction to this braita. We have a statement from Rabbi Hanina. Ma'amid adam behemto al gabe asabim b'shabbat. It is permissible for a Jew to take his animal on Shabbat in front of grass that is still attached to the ground in order that the animal can eat from the grass. Now, even though it would be forbidden for a Jew, obviously, to pull out grass from the ground, but the rabbis did not forbid putting the animal in front of the grass in order that the animal can eat. And the rabbis, furthermore, did not make a gezerah that if we're going to allow the Jew to bring his animal to the grass that's attached to the ground and stand there as the animal's eating, he might come and pull the grass out of the ground and feed it. Now, if the Jew pulls the grass out of the ground, obviously that's asur. The hiddush over here is it's permissible, and we don't suspect that the Jew is going to pull grass out of the ground. Aval lo al gabe mukseh b'shabbat. However, if let's say you have some grass that is was detached on Shabbat, okay? Now, this grass over here, let's say, is mukseh, which means the Jew obviously is not allowed to handle it directly. Because its mukseh was not designated for, let's say, for the Jew for any specific purpose. Now, why should that be forbidden if we allow the Jew to stand in front of the with the animal on attached grass? So what do I care if this is detached and mukseh? So what? Let him stand there and the animal will eat from there also. So the logic is, as she tells us, is because there we make a gezerah that it's detached. We're worried that the Jew standing there might pick up the grass and he might feed it to the animal. And now he's going to deal with mukseh. And therefore, we don't want him to come to pick up something that is mukseh. Now, you might ask a question. If you allowed him to stand there and you don't make a gezerah to pull it out of the ground, which is a much stricter isud, pulling out of the ground is could be isud deoraita. And we don't make a gezerah in such a case. So if it's detached, why should I make a gezerah that he might come to pick it up and give it to the animal and transgress mukseh, which is only rabbinical? The answer is, for that precise reason, on things that are stringent, like pulling out something from the ground, we don't suspect that a person is going to transgress in Isur Deoraita. Therefore, he could stand with his animal in front of the attached grass and feed it. However, Mukseh, which is only rabbinical, so a person might have a tendency to be lenient since it's only midrabanan, so the rabbis have to enforce their law. And therefore they do not allow the fellow to feed his animal on detached grass, lest he come and move the mukseh. They might ask another question, but isn't mukseh only asur midrabanan? Here the rabbis are making a gezerah legezerah. They're telling you, not only can't you move mukseh, which is only asur midrabanan, but we don't even want you to feed your animal something that is detached while you're standing there, lest you might come to move the mukseh. That's a gezerah legezerah. That is a principle when it comes to gezerah legezerah. It's worthy to expound on at this point because we're going to use this principle throughout the Shas, and the Rishonim bring this down. When is it forbidden, or when do we say that we don't make a gezerah legezerah? That's only when the gezerot happen at different times in history. Meaning, if the rabbis, let's say, made a gezerah in one generation, and then the next generation wants to come along and add another gezerah to the gezerah that already was established, then you say, no, we're not gozer gezerah legezerah. However, if at the inception, when the rabbi sat down to make the original gezerah, in the same sitting, they forbade two gezerot simultaneously, so that's not a gezerah legezerah. That was the original gezerah. So that was the gezerah from the inception. And therefore we can say the same answer over here, that this was already, when the rabbis instituted mukseh, and they made the gezerah, this was done at the same time. Therefore, it's not bound by the rule of en gozin gezerah legezerah. In any event, we have a question from this statement to our Braita. The Braita said that if the goy goes and feeds his animal on Shabbat, the Jew is allowed after the goy is finished, to go now, and the remnants, the leftovers, is allowed to feed the his animal, the Jew's animal. He's allowed to feed his own animal. What do you mean? It's mukseh. And therefore, which means going into Shabbat, this grass is mukseh. And therefore, we just learned now in this statement that you can only stand in front of the attached grass, but you cannot stand in front of grass that is detached, lest he can move the mukseh. So how did the Braita say that after the goy is finished with his, himself, with his own animals, the Jew can come and finish? What about the mukseh issue? So the Gemara answers this, Dekaim la be'apa. Dekaim dekaim la be'apa literally means he stood in front of the face of the animal, which means Rashi says, Shelo tefne lemakom acher, which means he just blocked the animal so it cannot go to another place, the azla hi the akhla, and then the animal himself went to that area in order to eat, and we're talking where the Jew is not standing there. Which means, when did we say it's forbidden? That's only when the Jew is standing next to the animal and he's eating. Because the gezra is, he might pick up some of the grass and feed it to the animal, and it's mukseh. However, in this case over here, he just stood in front of the animal, so the animal could not turn right to left, and it ended up going to the food to eat. Now, since the Jew is not standing there by the animal while he's eating, there is no problem. So when do we say it's a gezerah? Only when the Jew is there. However, he's not standing there, it is permissible. Now we continue. Amar Mor, we just learned in the statement, we learned in the Braita, Bamed devarim amurim she'en makiro. When did we say that it is permissible for the Jew to benefit from something that the goy did? That's so long as the Gentile does not know the Jew. Aval makiro asur. However, if he knows him, we said that that's going to be forbidden. And the logic that she told us was because then we assume he's going to do it as well for the Jew. So the Gemara has a question. Harabban Gamliel makiro hava. He says, what do you mean? Rabban Gamliel was on the boat. Now, obviously he was on the boat with those Gentiles. The Gentiles must have known him. And still, on Shabbat, when the boat docked, the Goyim made the ramp to get off the boat, and Rabban Gamliel used it. How was he able to benefit from it? Bottom line, you're right, even though they did it for themselves. But you just told me in the Braita that if Makiro, if bottom line, they know the Jew, so therefore you assume that what? That they did it for the Jew himself as well. So how do you answer the situation of Rabban Gamliel? So comes the Gemara and says two answers. Amar Abaye shelo befanav hava. First answer is, you're right, they knew him, obviously, because they were on the same boat. However, when they constructed the plank to get off the boat, the ramp, Rabban Gamliel was not in front of them. And since he was not in front of them, so therefore, they did not have kavanah for him per se. And therefore, you're right, Abaye sounds like he's saying that if indeed Rabban Gamliel would have been in front of them, so then it would have been already asur. Because bottom line, even though they're doing it for themselves, but since they see Rabban Gamliel, they know him, so the kavanah is also to do the work for the Jew. But in this case, it was makiro aval shelo befanav, but he was not in front of them. That's the opinion of Abaye. Comes the Gemara and says, Rava Amar, Rava says, no. Afilu tema befanav. You could even say that Rabban Gamliel was in front of the goyim when they were making the plank. Ne'lehad, ne'lemeah. But we could use the same sivara that we use by the flame. That just like one flame benefits one, and it benefits 100, so you say the same logic by the plank. Kevesh ehad, kevesh lemeah. That just like making this plank benefits one, the same exertion in making the plank can benefit 100. And therefore in this case, Rabban Gamliel allowed himself to use it, even though it was makiro, and even though it was befanav. The other case, however, was talking about where the goy was let's say, cutting grass. So in that case, over there, when he's cutting grass, so if he knows the Jew, he'll cut extra. Right? You don't say that's the same amount of grass. The more animals that you're going to feed, the more grass you need to be cut. That's why in that case the Braita said if he's makir him, if he knows him, then it's going to be forbidden. Because there's a case where you can add. But Rava says in this case over here, there is no adding, and therefore it is going to be permissible. Now Abaye argued on this, obviously. Abaye held that no, the bottom line, if he's in front of him, Abaye is going to hold. He's asur. Why? Because then we assume that he's doing it for the Jew. Even though it's the, now you didn't have to add, let's say, to exertion, to more work, but bottom line, if he's having kabanah to do it for the Jew, it would be part of the gizra. So we have a mahloket, Abaye, and Rabba. Again, Abaye says that what? Rabba and Gamaliel was shelo befanav. And that was their tale. Rava says he was even befanav. And making a plank is not part of this gezerah, because you can't make extra by a plank. The same plank benefits the goy, benefits the Jew. Kevesh le'ahad kevesh le'me'ah. Metive comes to Gemara and has a question from a braita. Amar lehem Rabban Gamliel. It's part of the story of Rabban Gamliel getting off the boat. Rabban Gamliel said to his friends, "Ho'il v'shelo b'fanenu asao." He said clearly, since they made the plank not in front of us, neredbo, let's get off. So this seemingly proves Abaye, and is a question against Rava. How could you tell me, Rava, that it's even permissible if it is in front of Rabban Gamliel, when Rabban Gamliel himself admits and says, since they made the plank not in front of us, we're going to get off, Nered. So that's a direct question on Rava. So the Gemara answers that, Emma, let us say, Hu'il v'asa'o neredbo. Which is really what Rabban Gamliel meant to say is, since they made it, we are allowed to get off it. That happened to be, in that case, Rabban Gamliel was shelo b'fanav. So he just iterated what happened. But that does not mean that you need that condition. Happened to be in that case, Rabban Gamliel wasn't in front of those that were making the plank. So he said, really we can get off the boat regardless. Because bottom line, kevesh le'echad, kevesh le'me'ah. They did it for themselves. However, he threw in that word, and we weren't in front of them, because that was the scenario, but not that that makes the deen. That's the way Rava will answer that statement. Rav the Gemara says, Tashema, come and listen. Ir she Yisrael v'nochrim darim betocha. Let's say you have a city where you have Jews living in the city as well as Gentiles. Vaita ba mirhas hamracheset b'Shabbat. And you have a bathhouse that is operational on Shabbat. Im rov nochrim, if the majority of the inhabitants of the city are Gentiles, mutar lirchotz ba miyad. So then it would be permissible right away on Motzei Shabbat for the Jews to enjoy that bathhouse. Now, even though if you're going to go right after Shabbat, for sure you're benefiting from water that was heated on the Shabbat. Obviously, late in the afternoon they had to heat some more water, but still the Braita is telling us that since it's Rov Nochrim, so the assumption is it was done for the Nochrim, for the Gentiles, and therefore the Jew can benefit from it immediately. Now, Im Rov Yisrael, but if the majority of the inhabitants of the city are Jewish, Yamtin Bichte Shihamu Hamin. So then the Jew cannot benefit immediately, because it would be considered as if he's benefiting by something that a goy did for him. Therefore they have to wait the amount of time that's called Bichte Shiyasu, which means the amount of time that it would take them to heat water up if they started on Motzei Shabbat. And let's say it takes a half hour to heat the water up. We don't want them to benefit from the ma'aseh that the goy did on Shabbat. So if they go immediately, they're saving a half hour. So therefore, Let them wait the time that it would take them to do it if they started up on Motzei Shabbat, and then they can bathe. Now the Gemara finds a question in this Braita against something we said. What is the question? So Rashi tells us that in the Bura Matchil Bechdeshi Yehamu Hamin. Let's read that Rashi together, the way he expounds where the question is in this Braita. Bechdeshi Yehamu Hamin, Rashi. Shelo Yehene, we don't want the Jew to benefit. Bema Shigdimo Leahem B'Shabbat. Right? And the fact that the Goy did it on Shabbat, we want the Jew to wait that amount of time. V'chen b'chol ma'aseh Shabbat. For that matter, not only by heating water, but any ma'aseh that was done on Shabbat, natnu hachamim shi'ur, the hachamim gave the measurement of time, namtin le'ereb b'chdesh yasu. Fine, that they have to wait in the evening, Motzei Shabbat, the amount of time that they could have done it themselves. Now the Sheikh tells us where the question is. V'ha hacha, in this case, de'chimum le'echad, chimum le'me'ah. Which means here, when you heat up the bathhouse, the same amount of exertion heating it for one person is heating it for 100 people. You just heat it up in one shot, meaning you light the fire underneath the water and it heats it up. And still, what does it say? Imrov Yisrael. If it's the majority of the inhabitants of the city are Jews, that's the key. Majority of Jews is similar to saying that the Gentile knows the Jew. I mean, what's the logic of knowing the Jew? That he might do extra, or that he might do it for the Jew. Here also, since it's rov, it's like makiro. Asur. Now we said in this braita that still it's going to be asur. Now here the Jews were not in front of the goy when they were heating up the bathhouse. Which is, we just learned above that in the case of makiro, Abaye said even makiro is permissible. Shelo b'fanav. Well, here with Shelo b'fanav, it's makiro because it's rov. Shelo b'fanav because the Jews were not in front of the goyim when they were eating the wood. And still it says what? It's going to be asur. And although also it's a question on Rava, because Rava said even b'fanav is mutar. And here you see that even Shelo b'fanav is asur. So how do we reconcile this braita against Abaye and Rava? So the Gemara says, Hatam, in that scenario of the bathhouse, ki mehameme adata diruba mehameme. As we have a principle, when you're dealing with majority of people, you're more than one person, you're dealing with majority of Jews, then the assumption is that the goy is specifically doing it for the majority. And therefore, they cannot benefit. Even though it's shelo b'fanav, the assumption is they're doing it for the majority. However, in a case where you have, let's say, one goy and one Jew, for example, in the case of Rabban Gamliel and the fellows making the plank to get off the boat, there already you say, when it's not majority of Jews, then you say the goy is doing it for himself, and then you can make the sevara, kevesh le'echad, kevesh le'me'ah. So there's going to be a difference where it's one goy doing it, and there's a Jew there. Then we're going to make a difference. If it's makiro, so Abaye is going to say only shelo b'fanav. And in that case, Rabbah will even say b'fanav is mutar because kevesh le'echad, kevesh le'me'ah. However, when you're dealing with majority of Jews, for example, the case of the bathhouse in the city, there the assumption is, even though it's the same amount of exertion to make the fire, but still, they're doing it for the majority of Jews. So there's a difference between majority of Jews and one Jew and one goy that are doing it. Comes the Gemara and gives
the boat, then there would be a majority of goyim on the story with Rabban Gamliel.
You could say there was one goy and you have Rabban Gamliel. You don't have a scenario over here where you assume that the goy is doing it for the majority of Jews. That she's Lashon is, and I quote it, look at that, she dibura bechil adata diruba mehameme, v'ikar hilul ha-shabbat b'shvilam, aval nukhri v'yisrael, But in the case where you just have a Gentile and a Jew, then Okriya Da'atad and Afshehu Da'abid. In that case, the goy would say he's doing it for himself. Shari la Abaye Shelo Befanav. So Abaye will say it'll be permissible. Shelo Befanav Ulaba Afilu Befanav. So making a difference between just a singular Jew and a goy, and a difference between a case where you have a majority. The Gemara asks a similar question. Tashema, 4 lines from the bottom. Ner hadaluk b'msiba. You have a flame that's lit at a party. Imrov nochrim, if the majority of the people at the party agoyim, mutalish tamesh leora. So then the Jew can't benefit from that flame. Imrov Yisrael asur. If the majority are Jewish at the party, Israel, then it's going to be forbidden. Mehsa asur. If it's 50-50, it's going to be asur. Since you can't figure out exactly who is this lit for, so the Beraita here is Mahmir and says it's going to be forbidden. Now let's analyze over here. Here you have Rov Yisrael. Right? Rov Yisrael are at the party. And therefore, when the goyim are lighting the flame, it's considered as if what? Makiro. It's as if they recognize them. Right? So that she says on the bottom line, V'ahacha David dumya de makiro. It's similar to makiro. Why? Hu'il v'rubani nu asik date ladik apishpila v'ketani asul. And we're saying asul. Now this case over here is really a question on Nava. Because the Jews were in front of the goy. This is considered what? Bifanav, right? And still we're saying over here that it is going to be forbidden. Means Rava said even makiro is permissible bifanav if you don't have to do anything extra. In this case, so they don't have to do anything extra. They're lighting the same flame. Ner lehad, ner lemeah. The same flame that they're lighting for themselves, they light for others. And Rava said that even makiro bifanav in such a scenario is permissible. So therefore, the why in the case of we have Rav Yisrael, which is considered makiro, and the goy lit the flame, you're saying it's going to be asur. Kemara gives the same answer. Hatam adarta deruba madleke. Again, when you have Rav, when you have majority, then already you assume that the goy is doing it for the majority of people. It's not like a case where you just have one goy and one Jew, and the goy is doing it for himself. Then already we say that the goy is doing it for himself and the Jew could benefit. But here, where the goy is doing it for himself, however there's majority of Jews, then the assumption is he's doing it for the majority, and therefore it's going to be forbidden. Now she says on the top, Hilkach Yisrael Ikar. And therefore the Jew becomes the issue of it. He's the main one that it's being done for, and therefore is going to be forbidden. Let's continue reading this Rashi. Umehsal mehsan amen. Even 50-50. Leka lemekam ala demilta. You can't figure it out, which means you don't know who exactly it was done for. Tika lemar ikar da'ted demanik b'shvei Yisrael. You can't say that the ikar is for the 50% Jews. Tika lemar ikar da'ted demanik b'shvei nochri. And you can say it's also for the 50% of the Gentiles. Therefore, in that case, we are Mahmir. Aval, again, we go back to the principle, Nochri v'Yisrael. Let's say you have a Gentile, one Gentile and a Jew, v'madlik atzmo mishtamesh le'ora, and let's say the Madlik himself, the one that lit the flame, is using it, v'day ikar adate didei avid. For sure, he's doing it for himself. So again, in a case where it's one against one, and the goy is benefiting from it, so then you say what? He did it for himself. When there's a majority of Jews, it is different. That's the chiluk that the Gemara is making. Comes the Gemara, gives one last story. Shemuel ekla lebe avin toran. Shmuel found himself in the home of Avin from the place that's called Toran. Atahu Nochri. There was a certain Gentile that came, Adlig Sharga, and he lit the flame. Ahdirinu Shmuel le'ape. So Shmuel right away turned his head. He did not want to benefit from the flame that was lit by the goy. He assumed, obviously, he was sitting there, he was Jewish, he assumed that the goy came in and did it for the Jews. Kevan de hazad de aite shtar ve kakare.
When Shmuel then saw that the goy took out a document and he started to read from it, Amar, he said, Adata de nafsheu d'adlik. So it's evident that he lit it for himself. After all, he wanted to read his shtar, and therefore he did it for himself. So then Shmuel turned around and faced Eli in order to benefit from it. Which means over here, the chidush is like this. Even though it was makiro, right? Even though he obviously they knew each other. And over here, let's say you had, let's say 50% goyim, 50% Jews, where normally we say in that case it's going to be asur. The hidush over here is, when do we say it's asur? When you can't ascertain why the goy did it. Then you have to assume that what? He did it for the Jews. However, in this case over here, it's evident. The goy put on the light, even though there were Jews in the room. So why did he put on the light? Originally, Shmuel got nervous, said, oh, he probably did it for us. So he closed his eyes. However, once he saw that the goy took out a document in order to read it, it's clearly evident that the goy is doing it for himself. I don't care how many Jews are there now. When it's evident that the goy is doing it for himself, so therefore, even if you have other Jews there, we're going to see it is permissible. So that's another condition in the law that Shmuel teaches us. And that would be the case of Shmuel. In that case, we do not make a gezerah. Specifically in this case, where it's ned le'echad, ned le'me'ah, that there's no gezerah that he might come to add, because one flame benefits one as it benefits 100. Hadran anach kol kitve. This ends the perek of kol kitve, the 16th perek, and now we move on to the 17th perek. Perek Kol HaKerim. Our perek primarily discusses the laws of Mukseh. And the Mishnah begins, Kol HaKerim Nitalin B'Shabbat. All Kerim, all vessels, are permissible to move on Shabbat, which means we're talking about obviously vessels that are non-mukseh. So what's the hadush? That non-mukseh vessels can be moved on Shabbat. V'daltoteen immahem. The hadush is that not only the vessel can be moved on Shabbat, but even the doors of those vessels are permissible to be moved on Shabbat. Afal pi shenitparku. Even though they became detached. Which means the chidush is that don't think if the doors of these, let's say, boxes became detached, so now they're going to become mukseh because they're not functional. So the chidush in the Mishnah is not only are the kelim non-mukseh, meaning movable on Shabbat, but it is also permissible to move their doors even though they became detached. Now she tells us, and we read inside together, Kol HaKerim Nitalim Meshabbat V'Daltot Yamahem. Kol HaKerim Sheyesh Tem Daltot. Any vessel that has, for example, doors. Kegon Shida Teva Omigdal. That would be, let's say, a box. Or a Teva is, let's say, a Shida is a carriage. A Teva would be a box. Omigdal would be like a closet. Nitalin b'Shabbat, you can move those items on Shabbat. V'daltot sheyesh lahem b'tzidan amahem. And furthermore, you can move the doors with them, not a problem. Even though, let's say, they became detached, these doors, as she says, nitalin. V'en domim l'daltot abayit. That's the hidush. It's not similar to the doors of, let's say, a house. She'en nitalin. If the door comes off its pivot on Shabbat, it's going to be mukseh. The doors of the house are not ever prepared to move, she'enan keli, which means it's never a keli. The house is not considered a keli, and therefore the doors that are attached to the house, even though they come apart, are going to remain mukseh. Ma she'en ken, which is not so much. Let's say I have a regular keli; it's movable on Shabbat. So the Hiddush is, even though the door falls off, however, since it came from a keli, which is movable on Shabbat, so the door follows the keli. But a house is not a keli. Therefore, when the door comes off, it doesn't have anything to make it permissible. Therefore, it's going to be mukseh. Comes the Mishnah and continues. And the Mishnah actually speaks this out in the second line. She'enan domim de daltot abayit. These doors are not similar to the doors of a house. Defi she'enan minamuchan. Because they are not coming from something that was prepared. Meaning it does not come from a keli. Notel adam kurnas. Person is allowed to take a kurnas, that would be like a hammer, take a hammer on Shabbat in order to crack open the nuts. The Gemara will explain exactly what type of hammer we're talking about. Kardom lahtoch bo et devela. One can take a hatchet in order to cut up the devela, the cake of pressed figs. When you put the figs together, they become very thick, and therefore you need a hatchet in order to cut through it. Megira, one would be able to take a saw, lagur ba et givira, in order to cut through the cheese. Magrefa, which would be like a shovel, ligrof ba et grogrot, in order to collect, let's say, grogrot, the figs that are in the barrels. Etarachat ve'etamalgez. These are like fork items. As she says, the malgez is made out of metal and it has three teeth on it. It's like a pitchfork that they usually use to, you know, turn over the hay or the straw in the fields. So you're allowed to use these items. The rahat is also a type of instrument that's used for taking things like this. Latet alav lekatan. So you can use these items as forks in order to put food on it, in order to feed the katan. Right? To feed him, that she says, his mizonot, his food. Eta kush ve'eta karkar. Kush and karkar, these are instruments that are used by weavers. They're sharp, pointy instruments. So what do? In order to, let's say, you know, pierce a strawberry or a different type of fruit, to pierce it. Lahtov bo, in order to pierce a fruit in it, in order to eat it. Again, that would be permissible. Machat shel yad, that would be a needle that's used for sewing. Litol bo et hakotz, you can move that on Shabbat in order to take out a splinter from one's hand or from somewhere on the body. Veshel sakaim, that would be a bigger marat, a bigger needle that's used to make sackcloths. Liftoach bo et hadelet, a person lost his key and needs to pick the lock, so he'd be able to use a big mahat of sakaim that the sackers use in order to make these sacks, in order to open the door. And the Gemara will explain these cases. Comes the Gemara and begins, Kol HaKelim Nitalin. We learned in the Mishnah that all the vessels are movable on Shabbat. Ve'afal pi shenitpareku b'Shabbat. Now the assumption is that even if they came detached, the doors became detached on Shabbat, so it is still permissible to move those doors. So the Gemara says, "Velo mebaya behol." By the Mishnah using the word afalpi, even though, it sounds like that it's a chidush, that even though they broke on Shabbat, they are still permissible. And it goes without saying that if they broke during the week, it would be permissible to move those doors. It sounds like the real idush is if they broke on Shabbat. But if they broke during the week, it seems pashut to the Mishnah that the doors of these vessels are not going to be mukseh. So the Gemara says, Adraba. On the contrary, b'Shabbat muchanin al gabeh avien, which means on Shabbat when they break, at least they went into Shabbat non-mukseh. So when these doors went into Shabbat attached, so if they broke on Shabbat, so I can say since they entered Shabbat as part of the literally avihin, their father, meaning the primary vessel, so they do not lose their status as a keli. However, behold, if they broke during the week, en muchanin al gabeh avihin, they're not prepared on the primary vessel, meaning when these things went into Shabbat now, they went in without their doors, and therefore they were not
prepared. So on the contrary, the Mishnah is misleading. Why would the Mishnah say, even though they broke on Shabbat? Obviously, if they broke on Shabbat, the Hiddush is really if they broke during the week. So Amar Abaye Hachi Kama. So read the Mishnah like this. Kol HaKelim Nitalin B'Shabbat V'Daltotehem Amahen Afal Pi Shenitparku B'Hol. The Afal Pi is not going back on Shabbat, but the Afal Pi is going back during the week, which means Afal Pi Shenitparku B'Hol, even though they broke during the week, Nitalin B'Shabbat is still permissible to move them on Shabbat itself. Let's read Rashi. Rashi says, Hachi ka'amar. V'afalpi, when that word afalpi is written in the Mishnah, lo aributa dinit parku b'Shabbat ka. It's not going back on that they broke on Shabbat. Ela aributa dinit parku. It's just telling you that they broke. Even though they broke, o b'chol o b'Shabbat ka. V'lo me'baya k'she'en me'chobarim. It goes without saying that if they are attached, they're not going to be mukseh, but even if they broke, is referring to even if they broke during the week, and then they already have a chidush, that what? That these items are still going to be non-mukseh. Now, even though it should be pointed out that there are some scenarios where if something, a keli breaks on Shabbat, even though it breaks on Shabbat itself, still the broken vessel now becomes mukseh. Why? Because there is a type of mukseh called nolad. Nolad is something that was created on Shabbat. Meaning, let's say you have a vessel that broke. Now it broke into a smaller vessel, and now that smaller vessel has a new function. So since it has a new function, that's considered being created on Shabbat. So therefore, sometimes breaking on Shabbat becomes worse. Because since going into Shabbat, it served as one capacity. Now it broke, and now it's a different vessel. So therefore, it'll be mukseh. But in this case over here, when the door breaks on Shabbat, it's still part of the keli. All you do is have to just reattach it. Therefore, it doesn't serve as its own vessel. And therefore, since your intention is to reattach it to the primary vessel, the primary vessel is non-mukseh. So therefore, the door that broke on Shabbat is not part of the isur of nolad, because it is going to be reattached to the primary vessel itself. And the Hadush of the Gemara is, even if they broke during the week, the logic is, since the doors are eventually going to be reattached to the primary vessel, and the primary vessel is not mukseh, the doors retain the status of non-mukseh. Tanu Rabbanan, we have a braita. Delet shel shida v'shel teba v'shel migdam. And you have these doors of a carriage, of a teva, of a box, of a door. Notlin. It says you're allowed to take these doors off, which means you could take them off the hinge on Shabbat. Notlin. Aval lo mahzirin. But you can't put them back. V'shelul shel tanegolim, if it's a chicken coop, lo notlin velo mahzirin. You can't take off the door, nor can you put it back. So the Gemara wants to understand exactly what this braita means. Pishlama shelul shel tanegolim. I understand the logic of a chicken coop. Why you can't take it off, nor can you return it. Kasabar kevan de mehabre ba'ra. Since the chicken coop is attached to the ground, they used to fasten the chicken coop firmly to the ground. Yes, binyan bekarka. Yes, stira bekarka. The laws of bone, building, and soter, demolishing, apply to things that are in the ground. And therefore, by putting the door on, it's considered bone. By taking the door off, it would be considered soter. I have no problem. I understand the lul shel tanegolim case. Ela shel sheda v'shel teva v'shel migdal. But by the cases of these movable items, Maika Sabar. What is the Braita? Because here the Braita made a difference. The Braita said, well, you can take the doors off, but you can't put them on. It says, Ika Sabar Yesh Binyan Bekirim. If they hold that there's the law of Bone applies to movable objects, so then Yesh Tira Bekirim. So just like there is building, there is demolishing. And therefore, you should not be allowed to take off the door.
Right? If you can't put it on, you shouldn't be allowed to take it off. The instead of bikini. Even if you tell me there's no demolishing by vessels in binyan bikinim, then there's no binyan. Therefore, it should be permissible to put the door on. Which means, how do you split it? How do you say by the kelim that you could take the door off, but you can't put it on? Make up your mind. Is the binyan bikinim? Then there's tira bikinim. If there's no both ways. So give us Amar Abaye leolam kasabar yesh binyan bikinim. Really, I'll tell you, the laws of boneh do apply to kelim. The yesh tira bikinim. And really, the laws of demolishing also apply to kelim. Vishinitlu ka'amar. Meaning, the way that she understands it, Vishinitlu ka'amar means we're talking where, let's say, the items came off before Shabbat. The items came off before Shabbat. So what does that do for us? Nashi tells us on the first wide line in Nashi, Vishinitlu ka'amar, Nachi ka'amar. Delet shel teba sheda umigdal shenitlu en mahazirin. Which, you're right, if it came off before Shabbat, you would not be allowed to reattach it. Why? Because yesh binyan bikinim. Now, of course, it would be forbidden on Shabbat to detach it as well, because yesh stira bikinim. But the braita that was talking about only taking off is because it was removed already from before Shabbat. So again, when the Braita said you can't put it back, certainly you can't take it off either. So why didn't we discuss that case? Because the Braita was discussing Shinitlu. It already was detached from before Shabbat, so they would only discuss the case of not being allowed to reattach it. But you're right. Just like you cannot reattach it, it would be forbidden also to detach, because yesh binyan bekerim, v'yesh sitira bekerim. Comes Rava and says, I don't accept that. This is the way Abaye answered. I cannot accept what you just said. I have two refutations on what you just said. Hada dinitlin ketani. First of all, if you look at the lashon of the Braita, it says dinitlin, which is mashma, you can take them off. How do you tell me the word of the Braita means shinitlu, they were taken off already? Don't say that in the Braita. The Braita says what? Dinitlin, that it's mashmawat, that you can actually take them off, take the doors off on Shabbat. So first of all, the words of the Braita are not what you're saying. Number two, ve'od may aval lo mahzirin. According to you, Abaye, the words aval don't make sense. Because what does the Braita say? That aval, but you can't put them back, implying that you could take it off. But you can't. According to you, everything is asur. According to you, taking off is asur and putting back is asur. How do you learn the word aval? So elamar Rava. So Rava comes along and says, kasabar en binyan bekerim ve'en stira bekerim. You know what this braita holds? By movables, there's no binyan and there's no stira. And you know why you can't put the door back on these items? Not because of binyan bikinim. Really, there's no binyan bikinim. But you know what the gezerah is? We're worried if we let you put the door back, you might come and bang it in. You might come to take a nail and bang the door in, and that's going to be the melacha makebe patish. That's going to be considered adding the final blow to the keli. And therefore, you're right. From the law, you can really take off the door on Shabbat, no problem. Why? Because in binyan bekelim, there's no, or in stira bekelim, right? There's no demolishing when it comes to a keli. And technically, from the law, you should have been able to also put the door back. So why do they forbid to put the door back? Only a gezerah that you might come to bang it in with nails. So you see, you have two ways of learning this braita. Abaye wanted to learn the braita yesh binyan v'yesh tira, and therefore really it's forbidden to take off the door and put back on the door. But the Mishnah was only discussing putting back the door because shinitlu. It's talking about where the door was already removed from before Shabbat. Rava had two refutations. Number one, it doesn't say that. And the second stira that he had was, is why does it say aval?
according to you, there's no aval. Both are forbidden. So therefore, he came along and said, no, really, this braita holds en binyan v'stira bekelim. There is no laws of bone and building and demolishing by vessels. So what's the answer? The answer is that the reason why we don't let you put the item, the door, back is gezerah. What's the gezerah? You might come to bang it in. Let's go one step further. The Mishnah said, notel adam kunas. It's permissible to take a hammer in order to crack open nuts. Amar Rav Yehuda. So Rav Yehuda came along to interpret this Mishnah. And he said, kunas shel egozim lifsoa bo et ha-egozim. What type of hammer are we talking? Only a hammer that's designated in order to crack open nuts. That's permissible. Why? Because this keli, its primary function is for permissible things. It's only a hammer that's designated for cracking open nuts. Then the Yehuda is going to say it's permissible. Aval shel nafahin. If it's a hammer that's used by blacksmiths, for example, that it's not designated to crack open nuts, no. He's going to say that that is forbidden. Kasabar, obviously Rav Yehuda holds, tavar shemelachto leisur, that a keli, that's primary function is for something that is forbidden on Shabbat, for example, the blacksmith's hammer, afilu letzore gufo asur. Rav Yehuda is going to say, even to use it for a permissible item is going to be asur. Meaning Rav Yehuda has a strict understanding of mukseh. Meaning, since this hammer of the blacksmith, its primary use is what? For isur. To, let's say, do work on Shabbat. So he says, you cannot now on Shabbat come and take that blacksmith hammer and use it for something permissible. Because his rule is a kli shemelachto li'isud, which means a vessel that's primary function is for something that is asur on Shabbat, cannot be used for a permissible item. Permissible item, because in the terminology of the Gemara is tzorek gufo, meaning to use it for its normal function. A hammer is used to bang things. So instead of banging something isud, I want to bang something heter, like a nut. He's going to say that's forbidden. Rashi does point out that if that's going to be forbidden, sorek gufo, then sorek mekomo is also going to be forbidden. Meaning, if you have, let's say, this hammer of the blacksmith, and it's in a place where you need the place, just like you can't use the hammer in its usage to bang nuts, it would be forbidden also to move the hammer out of its place in order to put something there. So according to you, that sorek gufo is asur, and sorek mekomo would also be asur. Amale Rava. So Rava comes along and challenges this and says, Ela me'ata, according to what you're saying, sefa diktani. The end of our Mishnah that said, ve'eta rachat ve'eta malgez, right, these pitchfork that is used what? Latet alav the katan, to put the food on it, to give it to the miner. Rahat umalgez, mimi yahadele le katan? Were these things designated as utensils for a katan? Obviously these items are what? Items that are usually used for isur. Meaning a pitchfork is used in the field in order to collect the hay on Shabbat. And still it said that even though these items are not designated for heter, meaning the primary function is isur, the Mishnah clearly said you could use them in order to give the child food, which means when it came to the hammer, all the Mishnah said was kurnas. So you can tell me, right, let's talk about a hammer that is designated to crack open nuts. But what are you going to tell me now? You have a pitchfork that is designated to feed ketanim? A pitchfork's primary function, you don't use it to feed the miners with it. A pitchfork you use for isur. And still the Mishnah is saying that if you use a melachto isur for heter, it is permissible. Elama Rabba. So Rabba redefines the Mishnah. Kurnas shel napahin lefsoa bo ha-egozim. He comes along and says you can even use a blacksmith's hammer in order to crack open the nuts. What's the logic? Kasaba davar shemelachto leisur letzorek gufo mutar. Rava is going to say that even though its primary function is for isur, but if you use it for a permissible item, it'll be mutar. Therefore, just like you use the pitchfork, which its primary function is for isur, you can use it to feed the katan. tzorek gufo for its primary for a permissible function. So too, you don't have to tell me it's a hammer that you designated for cracking open nuts. Even a blacksmith hammer, which is designated for isur, for so that's forbidden on Shabbat. If you want to use it for a permissible function, it is mutas. We have a great machloket here now between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabba regarding the use of a kli shemelachtol isur. According to Rabbi Yehuda, asur to use a kli shemelachtol isur, whether it's tzorek gufo or mekomo. And according to Rava, he'll say it is permissible to use a kli shemelachto le'isur letzorech gufo. Baruch Adonai le'olam. Amen v'amen.